You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. All of us have some version of ourselves who lives in our head. Your favorite self, your strongest self, the self that this world, for whatever reason, doesn't want to let you be. For queer and gender non-binary artists, that self is not just a daydream. It's someone who might get you through years of being made to feel like an outsider. It can also be a canvas for really important ideas. Detroit photographer and curator Daryl D'Angelo Terrell has been exploring identity, image, and history through their work. Terrell, a 2019 Kresge Fellow who identifies as queer and femme, has been working on a particularly interesting photo series featuring a face that they don't always show to the world. We started out talking about how Terrell first got into self-portraiture while an undergrad at Wayne State.
So I was originally just making just like frivolous work just to like get the assignments out of the way. And I had a professor who was like, you should really focus on building a body of work. You're talented, but you're just being lazy. And at first I was like, okay, let me see if I can take photos of other people. But then that became a problem because people's schedules or people would like flake. So one day I was just like, you know what? Forget it. I'm going to take photos of myself. Honestly, it came like me doing self-portraiture came out of needing a subject, and then of course like studying other photographers who do predominantly self-portraiture really opened my eyes on how important and how powerful self-portraiture could be.
You've been working on a photo series of self-portraits, but they're portraits of a very specific side of you. Mm-hmm. an alter ego named Dion.
Mm-hmm.
Would you introduce us?
Oh, okay. So yeah, Dion is a fat black femme queer non-binary identifying individual. Dion extends from my love and my admiration for all of the black femmes I grew up around on the east side of Detroit. So I pull influence from a lot of them, but also a lot of my like friends who are like in my close circle, but then also from like poetry and music and television and movies.
What do you feel Dion represents that you weren't expressing in other ways?
Oh, I mean, so I feel like a lot of my work, specifically when it's self-portrait, it's a way for me to pretty much be self-reflective, for me to really think about myself and the way that I maneuver through space and through like the world. And being that, okay, I am 6'7", 360 pounds, I am big. I, in this body, have had insecurities, right? Feelings that I'm not worthy of, to be desired, not feelings that I'm not worthy of love. Like, I'll be 29 this year and I've never been in a relationship, but I have friends who, like, are married with children and own homes, and I'm, all of these things were always in the back of my head. So I started thinking about how I can pretty much present or formulate a false identity or an alter ego that exhibited everything that I feel like I lack.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing so came Dion, and Dion became this extremely high femme person because, again, I admire the girls from my hood, like the girls in the late 90s, early 2000s who have like the extremely long fingernails with the airbrush designs and the rhinestones on it. The girls who would go to the beauty supply to buy colored contacts. The girls who would buy all of this costume jewelry and cover their neck in it when I was in high school.
These photographs do not represent drag in a traditional sense, but Dion is confident and Dion is very glamorous.
Mm-hmm.
And these photos seem to be influenced by a whole range of images.
Yeah.
From Robert Mapplethorpe's more austere self-portraits.
Mm-hmm.
To the black velvet pop art images of black women that you've talked about seeing when you were a younger person.
Yeah.
Could you just talk about on an art direction level how you think through her looks in these photos?
Oh, definitely. So the first three diptychs are titled Untitled Dion Number 1, 2, and 3, or Sitting Pretty, or These Men Revolve Around Me. In this image, I found it to be important to purchase a peacock wicker chair. So, like, growing up, my mom, my auntie, other elders in my family, people in my community, they always had these photos of themselves and these peacock wicker chairs.
It's a staple.
It's a staple, definitely. And then, like, growing up and becoming really interested in just, like, black history and finding out who Huey P. Newton was and seeing this photo of him in the peacock wicker chair with the spear and the shield, right? And then back to the black velvet pop art paintings that I used to see in my Auntie Wanda's house of, like, this black woman sitting at a throne with two leopards at her feet. I think about that peacock wicker chair as, like, the African-American throne. It's like it's our way of honoring ourselves as king and queens, as royalty, as putting, like, it's a way for us to honor and cherish ourselves in ways that no one else outside of our race will and does.
I don't know if it's a case of the materials or just the posture. I mean, it's kind of impossible to slump in a peacock wicker chair.
Yeah, because you'll fall over.
Yeah, right?
I've done it.
It just lends this sort of regal attitude to the whole picture.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Just to switch gears a little bit, could you tell us a little bit about where you work and how you work these days? Part of the reason I ask is that you received a Kresge Arts Fellowship last year.
Yes, true.
It's $25,000, and that is a big grant for a working artist.
Yeah, especially someone early in their career.
Yeah, but at the same time, when we think about $25,000 in terms of, like, you know, a salary, it's not that much.
True, true.
So I just kind of wondered what it's like to try to put together the practical aspects of your practice.
Thankfully, receiving the Kresge, I, like, purchased a lot of equipment. I commissioned a lot of people to help me with some photos that I have not yet, like, made public yet. So, like, I've gotten wigs customly made. I've had makeup artists actually do my makeup. I've purchased, like, new lenses, backdrops, things of that nature.
You mentioned that back when you were growing up, you weren't really making the scene in terms of nightlife.
I felt uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, who's your community within Detroit right now?
That's interesting because I've been asking myself this question. So I feel like I have my friends, my close knit friends, in which there are about six or seven of them who I can go to and vent to and talk to and cry to and have conversations about art with. But then as far as, like, a wider community, I don't know. it's something I'm trying to restructure. But I do feel like I'm growing a community. I honestly just can't identify who they are.
Detroit's art scene feels so charged up. Mm-hmm. But would you say it still can be a challenging place for queer artists to find each other and to find work?
I won't say it's hard for us to find each other because once you find one, it pretty much becomes word of mouth, and we do, like, talk about each other. So I guess that would be part of my community. yeah, so, like, there are a handful of amazing queer artists here in the city who I love to hang out with, and we talk about art and theory. So there's one painter, and her name is Aijana. Me and her went to a bar and talked about Fran Moten's book Black and Blur, and pretty much how it's difficult to understand and how he talks in circles using these huge words that are inaccessible to people who don't have a PhD in art, right?
Which is most of us.
Hello, I don't even have my PhD in art. I don't think I want it. But as far as, like, finding other queer artists in Detroit, we have that. Now, as far as showing in Detroit as a queer artist, it works and then it doesn't work, right? So because my work currently with working with Dion, it is very visibly queer. I'm being tapped for all of the Pride exhibitions right now, which is bittersweet because I'm like, okay, so between January and June, I don't really have anything planned. And then June hits and I have four exhibitions in one month. And I'm looking like, and all of them want the same work. And it's just like, okay, this is great. I'm happy that you're interested in my work. But I don't want to be that person who's only tapped locally when it comes to Pride events. Like, the work that I'm having is having a much wider conversation than just, like, here's gay work. Like, right. I'm having conversations about this intersectionality of what it means to be black and queer. I'm having conversations about what it means to be a black male-bodied person who is feminine and who exists within his feminine energy. I want to be seen for more than just like, oh, the go-to gay artist for Pride Month. But outside of that, yeah, I mean, people, a lot of DIY spots I work through. If not showing art, I will like do a DJ set, or I would be the MC, or things of that nature. So there are ways for me to be present in Detroit.
Among the many, many things that you do, mm-hmm. you started an Instagram account called the Museum of Contemporary Art IG.
Yes, Mocha IG.
And you use it to show work by people who are part of the African and Latinx diaspora.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a riff on Mocha as a museum of contemporary art only existing in the Instagram world.
Right, right.
It's so sad that this is an Instagram account and not a brick and mortar museum
yet. You know, we're going to speak this into existence.
Yes. Could you talk a little bit about how you curate that feed?
Yeah, definitely. So I went to grad school not only to become an artist, but to curate. This is something I've always been interested in. My mom, when I was in, I think I was in 10th grade, my mom took me to the DIA after they had finished remodeling. And this is when I first seen Glenn Ligon's To Disembark, which is this freight box in the African-American art, contemporary art space of the DIA. And it's a wooden freight box that plays Billie Holiday's Strange Fruit. And this box is pretty much talking about Henry Box Brown, which was a slave who put himself in a freight box and shipped himself to freedom. And I remember my first time going into this specific gallery space in the museum, and it's that piece is in a corner. It's next to Alison Saar's Blood, Sweat, and Tears and a Betty Saar piece. And then across from it were like these two beautiful photos from James Van Der Zee. And then away from it was a painting by Robert Colescott. And I'm sitting in this space, and I'm like, what is going on? I was like, wow. Like, I think that was my first time having a strong emotional response to art. Like, actually sitting there and, like, tearing up. My mom is, like, sitting there talking to the security guard, and the security guard is talking to my mom about, like, things in the space. And then, like, I'm listening to them, but at the same time, I'm, like, really engulfed by Glenn Ligon's To Disembark. Mainly because, like, even as a younger kid, I loved Billie Holiday. But seeing this piece and reading the literature that the museum had in front of it was really just like really effective for me. So in the back of my head, I always knew I wanted to curate. After graduating, I started applying for curatorial residencies and fellowships and jobs. And a lot of the times, the response was always, you don't have enough experience. Mm-hmm. So In the ages and days of social media, the best way to make experience is to make your own experience. So that's why I formed Mocha IG. Also because with my experience of like applying to a lot of these residencies, I was applying to like curatorial photography jobs, when a lot of times they were using photography as just like a documentation of yesteryear and not using photography as an art form, which is stressing me out. Mm-hmm. So I was okay, I really want to be able to like formulate how contemporary African American art and contemporary Latinx art is being produced at such a beautiful and high quality, and how this work needs to be seen.
It's very funny to me that everyone thought that Instagram would make a photographer out of all of us.
No.
But I that is clearly, if you look at Instagram for 5 minutes, you can tell that that's not necessarily true.
Not at
but
all.
It's definitely made a curator out of everyone.
Oh, definitely, because we're thinking about how we're perceived. It's like we are carefully thinking about how everything is shown on social media.
Yes. Well, Daryl D'Angelo Terrell, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me,
Daryl D'Angelo Terrell. Keep an eye open for their work around Detroit this year. They're an artist in residence at Red Bull Arts Detroit. If you can't wait for that, and maybe you shouldn't, you can find them on Instagram. And don't miss the feed they're curating at mocha.ig, too. Arts and culture coverage on Stateside is supported in part by an award from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.